say that. They can't say that. What I am saying happens to be the boneless method of human wisdom. Look within. Find your own divinity. Detach yourself. Distinction. Materials and struggle. Turn on. Tune in and drop out.
Welcome to the Real Time Podcast, where Ines explains absolutely everything worth knowing about podcasting. Your host today is Templethav, so have fun and enjoy. So this is not a lecture today. Actually, it is a lecture, but it's not really a lecture. So this is a podcast, and I'm just producing it live, and yes, we are all in it together. So let's have some serious fun with this podcast. So there's only one topic on our agenda today, and it's podcasting, of course. I'm telling you a bit about the history, technology, and I'm going to present a couple of existing shows to you, and maybe thinking about what's up next. And I'm also going to present a bit of the equipment necessary, how to produce a podcast, how to do this production live, and what it can be like. So where is podcasting all coming from? Podcasting itself is both a brand new thing and also already a thing of the past, because it's here for a while. It has been longer here for a while than we all think. Radio recordings have been on the network for a long time, almost forever. But they never really made it to the masses, because there was a problem with it. The problem was distribution. And distribution, that's really what podcasting is about to solve. So what is this podcasting and podcast things? Podcasting is a term that's slightly different from podcasts. It's not a big difference, but it matters. Podcasting itself describes a way of how to distribute files on the internet in a very simple and a very effective way. And podcasts, on the opposite, are a new kind of radio show that borrow from the traditional format, from the original radio, but that have some kind of extra flexibility that traditional radio shows didn't have. So this is where podcasting and podcasts go together along well. Podcasting is a combination of tools, and it's a combination of protocols and data formats you find on the internet that have been here for a while, and it's actually quite simple. It's basically HTTP, it's RSS, and of course, it's MP3. So these are all names and extensions we all have known for quite some time. But putting these together, gluing it together in a special way, that's really what makes things fly. So let's start with HTTP. HTTP is the primary transport protocol of the internet, and we all know it pretty well because we're using it on the web browser every day.
And it's basically
the main building block of the web, but it's much more than just accessing web pages. It's
the way
applications communicate
in the future, and they
already do in a way. And the good things about HTTP as well is that it's basically implemented everywhere. It's deployed everywhere. You find it everywhere. Every tool, every box, every everything knows about that HTTP exists and supports it. And of course, for the same reason, it gets everywhere. It gets through firewalls, it gets all through all settings, so it's the seamless way through the internet. HTTP, in a way, is the choice of a new generation. So in comes RSS. RSS is probably not as well known as HTTP, and for a reason, because it has
many names and has many fathers. Many people claim to have something to do with it, and the story is long and complicated, and I'm not really going to bother you with this. More or less, the only name you have to mention is probably Dave Weiner, who brought RSS to the masses and was really the driving force behind putting that format to life and giving it a special use. He was not so much focusing on specifications and got some criticism from the scene, but in the end he was really more looking on what you can do with it and what it's actually what's actually producing, which is in a way much more interesting, especially when it comes to podcasting. And today RSS version 2 is more or less the standard, the de facto standard that really is also driving the podcasting scene right now. There have been other approaches to how RSS works, especially from the semantic web crowd. But in the end, they didn't really focus on what the problem was in this particular respect. So RSS prevails. And in the end, Atom, a new format that more or less adopted the way RSS sees the world, might take over sooner or later. But right now, we are sticking to RSS. So what makes RSS so special for podcasting? The good idea some people had was putting media inside RSS. Today RSS is mainly used to deliver small text messages and tell you that something is new on your website, that a blog has posted something, or maybe even that your development server spit out a new log message that you really have to know about. So this is the things that usually get put into RSS. But the small addition of enclosures really changed that. Adam Curry, a former TV and radio star, he looked really for a way to make delivery of big files easy and wanted a way to have big files delivered automatically without you being really a part of it. So some kind of background delivery, and RSS just seemed to be the right format for that. So he talked to Dave Weiner about this, and he introduced the RSS enclosures features to RSS 2. So this has been here for quite a long time, almost 4 years, and nobody really cared about what all these enclosures, didn't really know what it was all about, including many people who are using it right now. So the other problem is that you still have to deliver something. Just having a technology is not really interesting that much. So in comes MP3. MP3 is a format that many of us really know very well, I think. It's more or less the master of audio formats. It might not be the best, but it was always good enough, and that really was the reason why it was being used so much. It was just good enough. It was good enough for listening, but it was also good enough for storing. It had the correct ratio. It was really perfect to be adopted by a critical mass of people. So this is really becoming the point where digital audio. RSSs, this quality can be scaled as needed. Today, MPEG-4 AAC format is a close contender, but it's not really there where MP3 is, because MP3, like HTTP, is more or less everywhere, but it got some advantages. So, as this is a lecture here, it has obviously slides which you can't hear. But you could probably see it if your device supports it. As this podcast is delivered as an enhanced podcast, these slides are actually inside your music in your audio file. The problem is that you can't really do this today with MP3, so this podcast is delivered as an MPEG-4 file. But it's not probably that far away that we find this in MP3 or maybe even in the free format org as well, as just recently new standards have been established to put these chapter informations, pictures and URLs inside the audio file as well. But that's just enough tech speak for now. More on this later. Also, another very important part of the podcasting phenomenon is, of course, the iPod. The iPod changed the way people listen to digital music in a quite radical way. And in addition to that, the software was also very important. So iTunes, together with the iPod, made the syncing of music, coupling of two totally different working machines, quite easy. So podcasting was the vision of getting audio delivered quite fast, not only over the internet, but directly to your ears, because you can easily pass it along automatically to the machine that you're actually sticking in your ear. So this is broadcasting via the iPod. The only problem is there was absolutely no application out there that was doing this. So Adam Curry, the guy who was urging Dave Weiner, went ahead in 2004 and created a small program, actually a small Apple script. Not really a very nifty program. It was just doing the basic job. It was taking the RSS, was stripping the enclosures out of it if there was a new entry, and was automatically downloading the file and then dropping it into iTunes. And iTunes itself just synced it to the iPod. So this was a very weird thing to happen. But immediately when this program was available, people were sticking to this, saying, oh, this is a cool idea. Until then, he really tried to persuade programmers to do this, and everybody said, well, this could be a good idea, somebody has to do it sometimes. But when they're actually seeing it, they joined and quite quickly made a real application out of this that was named iPodder. Today, this program is called Juice because of, you know, trademark issues, Apple calling in saying, well, we love you, but we don't love you that much, so please do something about it. And another very important thing is that Adam Curry decided to not only provide this technology syncing music and machines and your earplugs and everything and the internet, he also delivered content. He delivered a daily show for the programmers just to keep them motivated. And in order to address these programmers, he called it the daily source code, because that's more or less what he wanted to produce. So this whole iPod thing kicked off a new generation of programs now known as podcatchers. Podcatchers are basically just pimped up RSS readers. Everybody of us is using RSS readers today. very popular programs like NetNewsWire on the Macintosh, that although it runs on the Macintosh, is accounting for 70% of the RSS traffic today, have been incorporating this feature. And well, Juice is probably a more flexible tool, but of course we will see more and more podcatching software coming out, and especially being integrated in existing RSS software. So all MP3 players more or less have this podcasting support, and if they haven't it today, they're going to have it tomorrow. Very important step in this whole history was when Apple stepped in and actually took on this phenomenon and added podcasting support to iTunes. I mean, that's really where it belongs, though, because iTunes is the program that's more or less tied to the iPod. And since iTunes version 4.9, this really gets very, very integrated. That's another very important point in history where podcasting was taking off. But there's no stop to that. You already find totally independent devices, small boomboxes that you can just put in your kitchen, and they have totally podcasting support built in. A radio with an Ethernet jacket. We might see video podcasting coming quite close after the audio podcasting wave. iTunes is doing videos for quite a long time now, and if you're looking on the internet, you find a lot of feeds that are not only delivering audio to you, but also video. Programs like DTV focusing on easy viewing, so there are real alternatives to iTunes and other programs. And well, they've got some problems introducing new namespaces, more or less gobbling up the RSS space, but it's not really a big problem, as this can coexist quite well. FireAnt is another program that's worth mentioning, as it's the tool of choice of the video podcasting scene until now. So you might try this out as well. And funny enough, even TV services like TiVo that sort of have the same approach to TV as podcasting in general, like delayed viewing, delayed listening to things, is integrating the iPod now and is integrating podcasts now. So satellites are no longer the primary source of visual and audible content. So we are really facing a new phase of evolution here. The new delivery method became immediately attractive to a growing audience. More people started producing podcasts, more people started listening to podcasts. And the numbers are increasing. I have no real clue how many podcasts are there out there. It's like more than 10,000, absolutely. And listeners, I have no clue. Maybe a million, doesn't really matter. Because it's not the sheer numbers that are impressive. It's not like TV or radio where you just have to get the most of everything. The main point is that you have total flexibility in quality and in the length of your production, and especially on the focus on the production. And of course, you're totally separate from any speech regulation issues. So you can just say what you want. I can say fuck and it's not beeping. And of course, you have a lot more listener interaction, because people can just send email, can send whatever, can send audio, and they really like podcasting because it's tailor-made for them. Of course, we're running into problems right now when it comes to music. Big organizations like ASCAP, BMI in the US, or GEMA in Germany, of course, haven't really adapted to the new phenomenon and have no clue how to deal with it. They're putting out weird licenses where you really have to pay an awesome amount of money, and this is so weird. More and more podcast formats are coming on the market. You see audio blogs, which is more or less a translation of the typical personal weblog, more or less translated into spoken content. Some people even read their weblog entries. But you also have the whole bunch of radio shows. They are more or less the same as you would find them on FM. The same goes for music shows. But they're much more focusing on, well, the other music. The music then can be played back easily on podcasts. I'm going to talk about this later. Of course, you find lots of interviews. Cartoons are coming up. Everything that doesn't really find its space on standard TV, on standard radio, is pushing into podcasts right now. So how can you do your own podcast? Well, it's easy steps. First, you do your recording, you convert your stuff to MP3, and you add your metadata. You drop your file into the podcast feed, and then you just sit back and relax and wait people to download your stuff. So what do you need? Everything starts with a good microphone. If you don't have a good microphone, you're more or less lost. You need some kind of pre-amplification to get the best of your microphone. That's just standard. And you always get this with mixers and the typical audio interfaces where you can plug your microphone in. You should use a compressor to raise the quality if you have the option to do so. And you should really take care to optimize your settings on that level to produce a really good audio quality, because audio quality in the end really matters. People don't like listening to something that just doesn't sound right. So the more time you spend on this, the better, because people will just love it in the end. Also, try to go ahead and use a good headphone, a so-called closed headphone that doesn't interfere with your microphone, for monitoring all this. So if you're recording, you're more or less caught by the music you're playing, and you're caught by your own voice, which really makes it easy to concentrate on what you want to talk about. Then you can choose your music, of course, but you should really get good quality of your music. If you're playing back badly encoded MP3s or things like that, you're not really making your listeners very happy. And you might also use a MIDI controller for interactive control during the recording. This is really the best for real time. So all in all, make it comfortable, make it warm, and make it pleasing, and you will see that your listeners are giving it back to you. Music is really important, as it makes your podcast much more enjoyable. You can use background music, or you can use breaks just as you like. But you should always keep the licensing stuff in mind. Today, Creative Commons licensed music is probably the best way to go, as you don't have to think really about what you're doing. As long as you're not making a commercial thing, you just want to produce your personal podcast in a way, you don't really have to think twice. So Creative Commons is easy. There are other approaches, especially Adam Curry, the already mentioned inventor of this whole movement. He's starting a way in between, drawing artists to his PodSafe music network, which is basically a good idea, as the artists do not really give away their rights on their music, and they still retain all the copyright la-la and so on. But they explicitly allow music being played back on podcasts. So what they get back is a lot of airtime. People just play that music because they don't have to pay for it, and draw the listeners to the artist, which is a good thing. you should also think about what you want to do with your recordings in the future. And you should also adhere to the license. For instance, the Creative Commons license tells you that you have to tell everybody else which music you're actually using. So that's what I'm doing now. So you're listening to a mix of DJ Lembouille, which is a very, very, very vivid promoter of Netlabel Online Creative Commons music. He's putting out very great mixes. So you can also download this mix totally separate without me talking on it at the Internet Archive. And well, you have no other obligations, just to give credit. When arranging your podcast, try to find the right speed to talk. Don't be too fast, don't be too slow. Well, you really have to find your way. Try to bring feedback into it to make your listeners part of the show. Let them speak, let them be a part of the show. Give them the feeling that they can actually contribute, that they can actually give something back in a way. And you will give them back at that very minute as well. If you have the option, try to produce your podcast live. Try to do it in one flow, because you don't really have to think about, did I say this before? Oh no, I didn't. In what order I'm going to put this recording in, and so on. You're just losing a lot of things. Of course, you aren't going to make mistakes, you're going to repeat things, you're going to make errors, and so on. But this is really what's making a podcast much more personal, and people won't really care. They're much more caring about you, caring about the content and what you really have to say, and that's what's in the center of the whole podcasting movement. You also need good recording tools, of course, and you can do this with your computer. There's a program out there, Audacity, which is free and basically provides you with all you need. The latest version actually adds some interesting features that are particularly useful for podcasting. But there are also lots of commercial tools available. You name it, GarageBand, Cubase, Logic, the big ones. Well, some of them are quite expensive, some of them are quite cheap. You really have to see what you're using. This podcast is produced with Ableton Live, which is a really cool software to do it live. But you really have to find your way. Multitrack live recording has the advantage that you can really rearrange everything a bit later on before you actually put out the podcast, so you can adjust the levels, you can adjust the music if you made mistakes, without actually changing the content or without actually changing the flow of your podcast. So there's lots of stuff out there. You can just choose what you like. You don't really pay so much for the software, and it's probably, if you want to really go with free software, that's fine. If you want to use some of the more sophisticated tools, I think it's fine as well. One very problematic part in recording podcasts is the recording hardware. You need enough inputs to your computer, and you need inputs that have the necessary quality. So you can go for either whatever is built into your computer, or you can just get one of these external audio interfaces that are plugged in via USB or FireWire. But you really have to care about driver issues, because some of these devices bring along very weird drivers that don't really work. And of course, as you're going digital in that area, you really have to care about latency, because if you want to do a good recording, you have to listen to your voice, and if your audio interface is producing too much latency, you'll run into trouble. So that's really something you have to care about. Also, if you want to integrate callers like telephone, you can buy one of these very expensive telephone hybrids, or maybe you get a used one somewhere. Much more interesting for the near future, of course, is using internet telephony tools like Skype or Gizmo or whatever there is on the net as well. After you have done your recording and you cut everything together the way you wanted it, you have to encode your podcast. And this is also a very important step, as you have to, if you're compressing your recording. Until now, everything is recorded as it was. And if you are encoding it, you really have to think twice about which format you're using. One is the question of what format family you're choosing, if you're going with MP3 or if you're going with any other audio format like MPEG-4 AAC. And you need a good tool. There's a free program called LAME that comes in many flavors on all operating systems that does the MP3 encoding very well. You should just try many different settings or different encodings as well to make sure that your music and your voice isn't distorted in any way, because if you do that, you're losing everything. As I said before, audio quality is really important for the listening experience, and if you have to choose, I would recommend that you always choose audio quality over bandwidth, because bandwidth is not really the biggest problem, but once the file is there, the only thing that remains is audio quality, so that's really much more interesting. So what should you do? MP3 does the job well, and AAC has some nifty features that might even produce better audio quality. It depends on what you think about. The Ogg Vorbis file format is a very good contender, does actually very brilliant compression, but it really has the problem that it lacks distribution. There's almost no portable player out there that really supports it. I mean, there are some products out there, but I'm not really bored. So you really have to care about that people are also listening to it. If you just want to defend the freedom, maybe Ogg Vorbis is fine. If you want to get heard, you should probably just stick to MP3, because, I mean, there are patents and licenses around, but in the end, you know, the message is much more important here. But consider metadata to be very important as well. Take some time, put in information, use all the tags that are there, put in show notes into your lyrics in your MP3, put in a picture, make it recognizable, and of course choose the title wisely, that's really important. And also you should include the license of your production into your podcast. All this metadata business is absolutely important, because more and more audio is coming on the net, and it's not only the question of what people are seeing when they're listening to it. Not normally they won't see anything. It's not what the playback software is displaying. It's much more about finding it, retrieving it, getting it back from the net, and also you have to care about search engines. So make use of track numbers, of titles, album names, everything that's in there. Put your information in there, and if you're really producing a lot of podcasts, try to be consistent. But whenever you think something is better than you did it before, change it. This is very important. Also, you should try to find some clever naming for your files too. And if you have done this, you're already on the way to publish your first radio show. So publishing podcasts means you have to find some way of producing a feed. A feed that's just a file that's out there in RSS format, and all the MP3 is linked from within your feed with the enclosures. You can use some weblog software like WordPress with all kinds of modules that support this enclosure thing. Pretty easy. There's some software tools out there that do it automatically, like Loudblog, which are more or less dedicated to produce podcasts. And there are also a variety of podcast hosters outside that deliver the service, and of course they include the bandwidth needed as well, which is worth thinking about. So I've been talking about the feed. The feed is the name of your RSS file. The feed is what feeds your listeners. So, as it is the direct interface to your listeners, it's very important to think twice about what to include in your feed. Of course, you should provide all the basic information, and you should be some a bit elaborate, not too terse, write what's inside, just use full sentences, but also be concise. And try to look at the features of the format and make use of some options. One of these options is the extra namespace that iTunes is presenting, which makes sense in many ways. It has drawn some criticism, but it enables you to state things like the duration of the recording, so people know what to expect before they download, if they haven't switched on the automatic download anyway. Yahoo has been putting up an RSS specification and extension to this namespace as well, which is much more focusing on TV shows and video content, so they're using it in their media video search system. So far, I haven't seen it anywhere out there. Maybe it's not going to play a big role, but you might as well have a look at it. Once you have produced your feed and you are offering the podcast on the net and people can just subscribe to your feed, the last thing that's necessary is that you have sort of advertised your podcast. There are many ways, there are many online directories where you can just put in your information. And of course, if people know you, you don't really have to do that. Nobody is forcing you to do that. People can just subscribe to you and find you like they would have found your weblog before. But sites like indiepodder.org or the Podcast Alley are quite popular in the podcasting scene right now. And of course, the iTunes Music Store podcast directory draws a lot of traffic as well and makes it especially easy for people to subscribe to your podcast. Yahoo has recently opened a podcast service as well, and you will see that all of them, I would say even Google, is going to set up something like this in the near future because everybody wants it. And in the end, if you really want to be heard, why don't you just produce a promotion for other podcasts that can be used in their shows, just to point to you? I think this would be a good idea. So let's step into some more advanced features that you might use for producing podcasts and making use of podcasts. So just keep in mind that podcasts are a very easy and natural way of keeping your audience informed. Audio is easy to consume for many people that don't really like text so much. Podcasts have to be adapted to your audience. You have to think about the length and, of course, the periodicity, how many times you're going to publish your podcast. And it's very important that you just keep the personal touch alive, and that you just do what you just tell what you have to say. So this really makes things easier to explain in audio than you could do this in text. Regular podcasting just makes people stick to your channel, and that's very important. Also, try to enrich your feed. Try to put more stuff in there. Just add value. Don't just stick to your podcast. Give references. You can drop files like PDF or videos in your feed as well. They will be downloaded like audio is downloaded usually as well. Although people really do make a difference between a true video podcast that's only delivering video and an ordinary audio podcast that's just delivering a certain show. But it might help just enriching it a bit and you bring more information to your people and more value. That's good. Also, you should care about stimulating feedback. Make it easy for people to respond by opening up many channels. Give them many options to get back to you. Email, of course, or just have a weblog running in parallel to announce your podcast, of course. And the weblog itself can produce the RSS feed that's delivering your files. And if you have some extra content there, you can just make your show more trackable, longer descriptions, links to other sites. All the links you are mentioning in your show should be on the weblog as well. And if you have the chance to do so, make room for some kind of audio feedback. Make it easy for people to get back to you by voice, so you can just talk to them in a way, not live, but of course time shifted. So what's happening right now? We have a real podcast phenomenon going on. Everything is seeming to catch on pretty fast, and companies are coming, investors are coming, throwing lots of money on groups that really try to produce high quality podcasts or have some other means of addressing the crowds in a very effective way. But what's much more important is that podcasts really drive free speech. No longer are we tied to TV stations or radio studios just to produce what we have to say. And this is really, really important. And the format is much more flexible. And even more important, production costs are super low. You don't really have to spend a lot of money to do this. You don't really have to have a big studio. Of course, you should shed out some bucks just to have a good microphone in order to make listening to your show easy. But everything else is pretty cheap. Even the hosting and the delivery can be done pretty cheap today if you're just selecting the right the hosting company. So today on the internet you find all kinds of formats. You have audio blogs, I already mentioned that, and video blogs, you got talk radio, interviews, media feeds are producing this. You have the net label scene that's shelving out their music using podcasts, which is also a very effective way of getting new music out to the people. And you will see more daily soaps and TV series coming in the near future. You can also use social tools like the Delicious Bookmark Manager to automatically produce your podcast. You can just use the modern tag system to attribute what you are looking for and say something like, give me the top 10 most popular videos on the internet and please give it to me as a podcast. And you already have the files before everybody else is talking about it. Very useful. Podcasts are also very useful for education. You can just summarize, you can record your talks, your lectures, and you can just bring it to students or whoever wants to hear that as a teaching tool using a podcast. Of course, you can do all kind of business talk and recordings, like the recordings of the 22nd Chaos Communication Conference. Also, artists are using podcasts right now as some kind of backstage tool. They're getting back to the people who are hiring them and telling a bit more about how they feel about this, what they need, and so on. So this is all kind of insider gossip. You hear pilots talking about in the cockpit, talking about what they care about, or recording just their radio sessions while they're flying over the Pacific Ocean with no connection to anybody. And of course, TV recordings are just popping up. I already mentioned this with the TiVo example. But independent media scanners like the Crooks and Liars weblog that constantly monitor American TV for weird stuff are using podcasts now to get this content to the people. Also very important are podcasts for developers, software developers. More and more communities are using podcasts to produce interviews, to give some insight into the motivation of the programmers and why they have designed this library or that tool the way they did. Screencasting is a special thing just between audio and video by having spoken explanation of how to use a certain tool or a website while recording all the activity on the screen. So this is used in teaching quite a lot. Screencasting is really exploding right now. All kinds of event reporting, and of course podcasts are also very important for delivering very important TV content that's just not being aired on TV. Like Democracy Now!, which is a daily one-hour show that really shows the news, where you can see all the weird stuff from Iraq and all the weird stuff from all over the planet, and the inside reportings of New Orleans being flooded. All the shit you just don't see anywhere, not even on German television. You get it via the podcast, and you get it directly on your machine. So podcasting is also a very important tool for political activism. In the end, of course, the public radio is already joining the trend, and we're going to see lots of entertainment, music, and weird and totally useless podcast shows as well. But, well, that's something you always have. So why do podcasts really work? What's so cool about it? Keep in mind that many people prefer listening and prefer talking over reading and writing. Many people are not that good in writing stuff, and many people are not really good in reading it. So far, we have only seen people excel on the web that are very good in reading, that have no problems of gathering content that's just in written form. But everybody else is more or less left out. With audio, you can solve that problem. And it's also much easier to judge and to say how this is probably meant, if somebody is actually speaking it, because you're listening to your voice. Much more personalizes the content than you can do with text. And this is really appealing to many people that haven't really been impressed by the web, just in the form of characters. Also, you can have much more focus, and you can much more aggregate content if you are talking about it. And you can repeat, and you can repeat, and you can repeat, and you can repeat. And if you're repeating it again, maybe people will finally notice. Words are just words. Also, podcasting is quite easy to set up. It needs some insight, and I've already explained a bit what you have to do in order to deliver your own podcast. But in the end, it doesn't really need much attention. Once it's on the net, you don't really have to do anything at all. Portable music players are quite affordable these days, and they get bought. You know, there are more iPods being sold than telephones right now. So this is really the driving force. People just have these devices, so if you're producing podcasts, there's the direct way to the ear. And in the end, it's very comfortable for the listener, as he can define what he wants to listen to, what he actually subscribes to, where the audio is coming from that he wants to have, and can also define when he wants to listen to it. And of course, a podcast can be stopped and paused and rewound and repeated and everything, and deleted, of course, as well. also the time delayed listening that's part of the podcasting thing is very ideal for people who are commuting, who are on the train or in the car, or that for some other reasons have some kind of unplanned breaks. So the portable media player is just the tool that's going to fill that hole. Also, podcasts make it really easy to construct a personal playlist of content and music. So people have the option of really making their own radio show, their own radio station. They define what's coming. So it's basically radio on demand. And even more interesting, podcasting is really about free speech, because people could just speak. They just speak what they think. And this is attracting a lot of listeners that are so bored from the standard media that doesn't really tell you anything new. Web and podcasts are still two separate issues, although the web is the main building block of the podcast thing. But there's going to be much more web and podcast integration in the near future. The first speech-to-text systems are coming up, and of course if you're putting a lot of metadata in your podcast, it's increasingly searchable and increasingly trackable. Search engines will soon focus on podcasts, and you can actually look inside podcasts and look for certain words or content being spoken. Weblogs and podcasts are a very, very good match already. So this is basically the same idea, but they're just using a totally different outlet. One is text and the other is audio, but everything else is getting along well. So we will see some kind of audio track packs in the future, where people can automatically notify other podcasters that they have taken up on their argument in their podcast. So in the end, this is going to form an audible web, some kind of the podcasting is probably the Usenet of audio. So if you want to become a reporter, instant podcasting becomes more interesting. Doing it live already dramatically reduces the time you need, but if you want to go ahead and really report live from some kind of event, you can do this already via telephone. There are a couple of hosts around that offering you that service, or you can directly record it in your web browser as well. Of course, sound quality is problematic, but you trade in this for speed. But there are some really cool portable, quite expensive, of course, recording devices that might help you, like the iRiver and the Archos, machines that are just portable digital playing devices that you can connect to your computer and you have all set up in very short time. Web-based audio recording is going to gain much more attraction, as this really seems to work and it makes podcasting snap. It's just clicking on your web page, you record it, you release the button, and you're done. There are also some problems you should have in mind. Podcasts are delivered by your feed, and if you're setting up this somewhere, keep in mind what happens if your web hoster is going down. This has already happened a few times. As people are subscribed to your feed, they might not know that. Well, it's just the web host's problem and not your problem that you're still able to broadcast. So use your own domain if you can and try to find some kind of stable server wherever. And keep in mind that popularity brings a lot of bandwidth issues with it. So choose a hoster that probably just says, well, I don't care how much you produce and I don't care how many people are downloading it. This is really important, as there are a lot of hidden costs and that you should keep in mind, because you want to produce, you don't really want to get bankrupt on this. So, this brings us to the last part of our little podcast about podcasting. Just want to tell you about some interesting tools that you might want to check out in order to help you with publishing your broadcast. One of them is the Coral Content Distribution Network, which is an open network of totally independent servers working collaboratively, offering bandwidth for everybody. All you have to do is you just add a top-level domain to each of your downloads, and this can really dramatically reduce your bandwidth as the network is taking over. People request the file, but they get it from this content distribution network, and you are not in the position to have all the bandwidth that's needed to push the data to the clients that actually want to request it. Another very popular tool is the BitTorrent protocol, and most of the podcatchers except iTunes have more or less integrated the BitTorrent downloading into podcasting. So you can also choose to produce your podcast by not offering the files itself, but the torrent files, and actually putting the download problem to your clients. They have, of course, to use a client that's supporting this, and as not all of the popular podcasters have really podcatchers have taken up on this, it might be a problem. But if you really know who is receiving your podcast, and if you really can tell them what tool to use, this might already be an option for you. So some clients are already supporting it, like the iPodder or Juice application that I mentioned. And BitTorrent and RSS are actually a very good match, as RSS immediately notifies a huge crowd of people that something new is available, and then everybody wants to start downloading it. That's exactly where the BitTorrent protocol excels. So, to put it in a few phrases, podcasts are a very personal thing. And they're both convenient, and they're very flexible, and of course they're fun. And I really urge you to check out the possibilities that this new technology can provide to you. There are quite a few resources on the web that you can ask for help. Wikipedia has a very brilliant explanation on the whole phenomenon, and there are a couple of websites that provide information on recording hardware and software and so on. And you find it in the notes of this podcast. So, the only thing I can say is goodbye for now, and thanks for listening to my show today. Tune in again when the next recording is heading your way, and you can just hit subscribe and you will be with us all the time. And please note that I'm not under the authority of the authorities, so have a fucking nice evening. And yes, you get this without the beep.